could use? You know what we could use? We could use an election. We could use a great big national election where everyone turned out, all the Democrats, all the Republicans, all the independents, the socialists, the Greens, the, I don't know, what other parties do we have? The Libertarians. Sorry, Ron Paul, didn't mean to leave you out. We could use a great big national election where the entire nation turned out and said once and for all, this is the direction that we see for the country. What? What? We had one of those 2 years ago? What the hell happened? Hey, well, we'll find out. We'll talk about it tonight. Hey, everyone. Welcome to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow in for Mike tonight. Once again, we are broadcasting live from the left coast from beautiful downtown Burbank at the K-Talk AM 1150 studios out here in Los Angeles. Delighted you could join us here. We're bringing things together somewhat at the last minute, putting the show together tonight. But we're glad you could join us for it. We'd love you to stop by, if you wish, at our chat room at bradblog.com, where I think For Earth and Dez and Jeannie Dean are holding down the fort. And I think Jeannie Dean is even in the house here tonight. So maybe, who knows, maybe we'll hear from her later. Anything could happen. Because we're making it up, as usual, as we go along. Not only could we use an election to determine the future of this country, the direction of this country, we could use a Republican Party that wasn't insane. We could use a Democratic Party that wasn't scared to death, who could get their act together and come up with a direction for this country that supports the people, that stands with the people, without fear for once. Finally, maybe, someday. Well, we'll see if that comes about. We're going to talk about the right-wing assault on everything that we hold dear in this country, beginning with Social Security. But first, Irene. You know, this is just absolutely incredible what is going on still to this day. Now, a lot of the media have already turned away. I was listening to MSNBC on the way over here. Lawrence was talking about Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney? Dick Cheney has a book, so we need to talk about him. At the same time, more than 40 are now dead in 11 states in what now appears to be the third deadliest U.S. storm in more than 30 years, behind right now only Katrina in 2005 and Hurricane Floyd in 1999. This is a full-blown disaster, or as Governor Peter Shumlin said, his state has a full-blown flooding catastrophe on their hands. Dozens of towns are cut off entirely from the rest of the state up there in Vermont. It's not just Vermont, also flooding, unbelievable flooding up in the Catskills in New York, in Windham, New York, Keene in the Adirondacks, in Massachusetts. We saw in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, Charlemont, you know, towns that don't happen to be Manhattan. But I started hearing from these folks thanking us. We were covering what was going on out there while the media was all, you know, navel gazing and saying, well, gosh, it didn't hit Manhattan, so I guess everything's all right. And this jackass, Howard Kurtz from CNN. Oh, don't get me started. Oh, that's OK. Go ahead. Get me started. I'll have plenty to say about Mr. Kurtz later on. Who had to be the first out of the box on Sunday morning to tell us all that, gosh, it looks like it was all just a bunch of hype. Howard Kurtz, by the way, he's a media critic. So, of course, his job is to critique the media. Shouldn't he know better, being in the media himself, being such a reliable source, as is the name of his CNN show, shouldn't he know better than to jump the gun? Didn't we learn anything 5 years ago, 6 years ago now in Katrina when everybody thought the morning after, oh, we dodged a bullet. Everything's fine. Nothing to worry about here. Have we learned nothing? Apparently not. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But, you know, my concerns really are with Vermont and Massachusetts, Connecticut, upstate New York, these places that aren't getting adequate coverage as far as what is going on. We're going to be talking in a bit tonight with Robert Steierwalt from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency to find out how they're doing up there, what the situation is on the ground. I understand they're actually airlifting food into folks, into these towns that are cut off in this hurricane of hype, as Howard Kurtz described it. So we're going to be finding out what the situation is there, and I'm also going to want to hear later on from you, from folks who are out there in those zones that are still flooded. Our number tonight, by the way, I forgot to give it out, is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I will want to hear from you tonight, particularly, as I said, if you're in those flood zones. Not right now, not this moment, because I'm going to get to a break shortly, because when we come back, we're going to have just one segment with him, but I want to have as much time as I can with Bill McKibben of 350.org. He is taking the lead in right now the protests that are ongoing even now at the White House. They have been going on for the last 2 weeks now, I believe, concerning the Keystone XL pipeline project that will ship an extraordinary amount of dirty oil from the Alberta oil sands all the way from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico. And of course, luckily, pipelines, they never spill, and we don't have to worry about, oh, what? Huh? People up in Montana have a different opinion to that? Yeah. People in Alaska, different opinion? Yeah, well, I suspect they do. So we're going to talk to Bill McKibben. There have so far been 595 arrests at the White House concerning these protests, trying to convince the Barack Obama administration to not give their approval for this extraordinary pipeline that will run some 1,700 miles across the USA, across farmlands. This is what it takes. This is what, you know, you've got a Democratic president, you know, came in. A lot of folks, a lot of progressives out there thought, they had hope. There was going to be a change from what we saw with the Bush administration. And what are we getting? Well, last week, the State Department said they're fine. They're fine with the Keystone XL pipeline. They're not worried about it at all. What could possibly go wrong? So these folks have been out there protesting now for weeks. We'll find out how long that is going to go and why it is important, why this protest matters. Because I'll tell you, the media, MSNBC, who's watching Dick Cheney tonight, they have not been covering these protests at all, really, for the past 2 weeks, at least not that I've seen. We've tried to at bradblog.com and on our Green News Report. We'll have one of those for you later as well. In any case, let me get to a break here. We're going to come back with Bill McKibben from tarsandsaction.org and 350.org. A big, big, big show for you tonight. Glad you could join us here. Glad I could be here at the last minute. You're listening to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com on The Mike Malloy Show. Please stay with us. That voice that had been away, haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike tonight. We are joined by Bill McKibben of 350.org. I should say the great Bill McKibben. I've been following him and his work at 350.org for quite some time. He has been out at the White House, I think, for the last 2 weeks or so, give or take time in and out of jail as the TarSandsAction.org protest continues concerning the Keystone XL pipeline and trying to keep Barack Obama from approving that 1,700-mile pipeline. Mr. McKibben, Dr. McKibben, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
It is such a pleasure to be with you, Brett.
Great to have you here. Glad you're out of jail for the moment. 595 arrests over the last 2 weeks out there at the White House?
I just came from the church where we're holding the training session for tomorrow, and there's looks like another 100 people set to end the day in handcuffs tomorrow. So this thing is building as it goes along. It's already by far the largest civil disobedience action in the environmental movement in a generation. And we're beginning to hope that it's reaching inside the White House a little bit.
What is the hope of getting arrested? I think you were looking at like 50 people a day at least getting arrested. What is your hope in getting arrested there? Will that get the administration's attention?
That's the hope. It's already taken what was a regional issue and a pretty obscure one 2 weeks ago and made it into a national issue, and got convinced every major environmental group to sign on to a very strong statement that this is the test for the president between now and the election. The reason I think that people are so willing to put themselves on the line here is that for once, the president gets to make a decision by himself. Instead of having to deal with, you know, the, to my mind, dysfunctional Congress that
right.
has seen him so often, this time, you know, the guy's got a 20-foot open jump shot from the top of the key.
And that's because this deals with an international border, so the decision
right.
is not
one of these sort of odd. He has to sign something called a Presidential Certificate of National Interest because this thing is going to cross an international border. And he can decline it, and if he does, the pipeline won't be built, and as the Prime Minister of Alberta said a couple of weeks ago, we will be landlocked in oil as a result. That would be a good thing, because this is the second largest pool of carbon on Earth. It's second only to Saudi Arabia. When we found the oil fields in Saudi Arabia 70 years ago, nobody knew a thing about global warming. So, of course, we went ahead and did them. But if we do this on the same kind of scale, then Jim Hansen from NASA, the world's foremost climatologist, said recently it's, you know, essentially game over, quote unquote, for the climate. That's why this is such a big deal. I don't know how it's going to come out, but I know that we've changed the odds some in the course of the last 2 weeks.
Now, you said today over at TarSandsAction.org that it seems as if the national media is finally beginning to pay some attention. They asked presidential press spokesman Jay Carney about it on Air Force One today.
That's right. During his press conference today, everybody said, what is the reaction to these protests in front of the White House? I think in part because when the president got to Minneapolis, there was a group of 40 or 50 there with a huge sign about the pipeline. This thing is spreading fast. There were people arrested in Montana yesterday trying to block the trucks carrying the equipment up to the tar sands. The State Department is hearing about it because there are pickets in front of the U.S. embassies in Egypt and in South Africa from people, big groups of people demanding that they stop. So they asked Jay Carney, and he said somewhat cryptically, "I have not told the president about it." Our hope is that they're not telling him for fear of, you know, hurting his feelings or something. most of the people who've been arrested so far have been wearing Barack Obama buttons and T-shirts from 2008. When I was in jail in the central cell block in D.C. for a couple of nights, which is exactly as much fun as it sounds like it might be, the guy who was next to me said, "You know what? The last time I was this uncomfortable, I was sleeping on the floor in the church in New Hampshire waiting to go knock on doors for Barack Obama. Mm. I really want to be reminded of why I was that excited about this guy.
Bill McKibben, when is that decision due? I know the State Department has done their environmental impact statement. They say they've given their thumbs up at the State Department. So when does Obama make his official decision?
Obama has said he'll do it sometime before the end of the year. That's all he said. And hopefully he's not going to rely too heavily on the State Department's environmental impact statement, because to call it incomplete would be, I'm a college instructor on occasion, and incomplete would be a good grade for this thing. They didn't even address, did not even mention the central issue here, which is how much carbon there is in those tar sands in Alberta. Instead, there's a kind of minute and endless dissection of how many leaks per kilometer of the pipeline would be acceptable and so on and so forth.
So it's about the leaks and the spills, not necessarily the burning of carbon, which, and I've just got another 30 seconds or so. I know we can't keep you over, Bill, but if he does not approve this pipeline, is it realistic to believe that all of this tar sand oil will not get used, will not get burned?
Well, it's been used for a little while. The only other pipeline they can run is west to the Pacific, and the First Nations tribes, the Indian tribes of Canada, have blocked that incredibly effectively for the last 5 years, and no one thinks that that block will be lifted anytime soon. Given enough time, maybe they'll figure out another way, but given enough time, maybe the world will come to its senses about climate change and stop doing this. If we can stop it for 10 years, that's an awfully good thing to have accomplished.
Keep up the good work, Bill. How long are you guys out there at the White House?
Here through Saturday morning, and Saturday morning will be a big rally and celebration. Everybody should come on down and join us if they're in the D.C. area.
Get more information.
Lafayette Park. TarSandsAction.org. TarSandsAction.org.
Very good. TarSandsAction.org. Bill McKibben from 350.org. Thank you, brother. Let's do this again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right.
Take
good
care.
Luck. You bet. Oh, man. What a mess.
Live from Progressive.
Next caller.
Hey, Flo, so what's up with the Snapshot discount?
It rewards your good driving habits, and it's our biggest discount ever.
Bigger than the safe driver discount?
Bigger.
Homeowners discount?
Bigger.
The phenomenally humongo discount?
If it existed, yeah.
Wow, that is big.
The Snapshot discount. It's new, it's a big deal, and it's finally here. Learn more at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Snapshot is not available in all states.
To the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike tonight. Oh, boy. I love that Bill McKibben. Thanks for booking him, Dez. He's awesome.
Well,
next time we need to get him for more segments. I know he was busy
being arrested or something like that. Doing this massive civil disobedience.
Yes.
Thing,
so. That, of course, is the lovely Desi Doyen. She's producing our broadcast tonight. She's also my lovely co-host on the Green News Report. Heard coast to coast and around the globe on fine progressive radio stations near you. What? It's not near you? Then call your progressive radio station. Call your fine progressive radio station. Ask them to run it. We're going to play today's Green News Report here shortly. But a quick update. We were hoping to get Robert Steyerwalt here from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency in this segment.
Yes, but they've been called into a meeting and update, so he'll have some fresh news for us next hour.
What? Is there some sort of Vermont emergency? If you'd like to, if you're in Vermont and want to talk about the emergency, or in upstate New York or Massachusetts or Connecticut or anywhere up there in the Northeast where you feel that the media, the national media in any many cases, not properly reporting what the hell is going on, what you guys are dealing with. You are not alone. It may feel that way, but there's a lot of us out here who are with you, and we would love to hear from you at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. You can tweet me, by the way, at the Brad Blog. And you can tweet the lovely Desi Doyen at Green News Report if you are of the twittering sort. So let's do it. You know, I got a lot on my mind. We covered a lot of it today on the Green News Report. 6 minutes of
independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oh, you say that very well. You're going to have to say that on Thursday's episode. Let's play that because it sets up a lot of the stuff that's on my mind that I'd like to talk about, not enough of this stuff is being covered. So very quickly, here's today's Green News Report, and Desi and I will be back with you with an extra added Green News Report extra as soon as we're done.
It's Tuesday, August 30th, 2011.
Hurricane Irene, special report, assessing the damage and the response.
We've just been devastated. We prepared for the worst, and frankly, we got the worst.
Catastrophic flooding in Vermont and other states.
And whatever else you want to say about journalism, it certainly shouldn't contribute to the manufacture of synthetic hysteria. And I think we may have done so with regard to this tropical storm, as it now seems to be.
The right wing's nutty response. Plus, making the link with climate change. The corporate media won't do it, so we will.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I live on the Gulf Coast. We put up with hurricanes all the time. In 1900, before FEMA, the local people rebuilt the city, built a seawall, and they survived without FEMA.
Yes, except for those 6 to 12,000 who didn't, Congressman Paul. This is your Green News Report. Des, I've been getting email and comments from folks in Wilmington, Vermont, the Catskills in New York, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, thanking us for our coverage at BradBlog.com of what is going on in their states as the mainstream corporate media, by and large, as soon as Irene blew past New York, seemed to have little interest in what was going on, even as states and cities around the Northeast were cut off by historic flooding. All the while, folks on the right, including Howard Kurtz of CNN, incredibly did their Sunday morning quarterbacking, calling the entire story hype.
Yes, the corporate media has an incredibly short attention span, and that's putting it kindly. This is definitely not over yet. Massive cleanup operations have begun all along the eastern seaboard in the aftermath of Hurricane Irene, with the full extent of the damage only now becoming evident. Hurricane Irene is now officially post-tropical storm Irene and still wreaking havoc throughout New England and into Canada. Along Irene's 1,100-mile path, more than 40 people are dead in the third deadliest storm in more than 30 years in the U.S., with record inland flooding, over 5 million people still without electricity, and economic losses and damage estimated to be in the billions from North Carolina to Vermont. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin, in an interview with Democracy Now!, described the historic floods that inundated his state.
When you see Vermont-covered bridges washing down our rivers, those bridges have been there for hundreds of years. So they survived the floods of the 1928 and 30s. And what that means is that, frankly, we're experiencing flooding now in many areas of Vermont that is unprecedented in record-keeping.
Vermont's Governor Shumlin went on to point out the gaping hole in the media coverage of Irene. Any discussion of the link, the connection, climate scientists have made between climate change and the observed trend toward intense storms like Irene and the implications for the future resilience of the nation's infrastructure.
We are getting more extreme weather patterns here in Vermont. We understand why, and we're going to work hard to not only dig out from this crisis, but to also ask some fundamental questions that I don't think are being focused enough in Washington, which is, how are we going to deal with a climate change future.
And yet, Des, on the right, you've heard people saying that folks on the left are blaming the hurricane on global warming.
Right. No one but right-wingers are saying that climate change caused Hurricane Irene. They're saying it made Hurricane Irene more intense. And of course, natural disasters tend to bring out both the best and the worst in people. And while there is great praise for the emergency response, with over 2 million people successfully evacuated, we're also seeing a lot of worsts. As mentioned earlier, CNN media critic Howard Kurtz complained that the media overhyped the danger of Irene with its wall-to-wall coverage, and then it was conservative columnist George Will of the Washington Post scoffing at the media's alerting the public that danger was headed its way.
Frankly, the corporate media goes overboard in just about every situation, but I can only imagine how many more would be dead had the actions not been taken that were taken.
Perhaps then there would have been enough deaths even for George Will and Howard Kurtz. Then congressional Republicans announced they will be holding federal disaster relief hostage to their political agenda. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is running low on funds after a record year for billion-dollar disasters.
I wonder why.
Disaster recovery used to be funded by Congress without question, but House Majority Leader Eric Cantor on Sunday said no additional disaster funding will be forthcoming without being offset by additional budget cuts from elsewhere. Meanwhile, presidential candidate and Texas Republican Representative Ron Paul thinks FEMA is the problem. Apparently, he believes people's own tax dollars should not ever be used to help them recover from a catastrophe. But that's news to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a Republican, who praised FEMA's assistance for hard-hit New Jersey.
We have FEMA folks right here on site. They're working incredibly hard in providing things to us that we need.
Governor Chris Christie, that lefty, pinko, communist governor of New Jersey, actually happy that FEMA is there to help. For much more on all of these stories and those we could not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves to tell you the truth that the corporate media seems to have a lot of trouble with. Download us anytime on iTunes from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Good night, Irene, and good night, Irene.
So there you go. Today's Green News Report. Well done, Des.
Well, you too.
Well, now Des is the managing editor. She shows up and with all the news, and all I do is,
heckle me.
Heckle you. Yeah, but you deserve it.
And everybody else.
So much, actually, in today's report, with everything that's going on, the response to it from the Republicans who are talking about cutting aid, cutting funding to hurricanes, getting rid of Ron Paul, God love him, wants to get rid of FEMA entirely. I mean, you got to give him marks for consistency.
Well, this is true. This is true. But the thing about Ron Paul is, like you said, he has very consistent ideological views, but he's just wrong to say what he said about FEMA.
And let's play. We have a slightly extended version of Ron Paul's comments there that you heard. This was him, Ron Paul, yesterday, I think.
I think it was yesterday.
After the Hurricane Irene.
I live on the Gulf Coast. We put up with hurricanes all the time. In 1900, before FEMA, the local people rebuilt the city, built a seawall, and they survived without FEMA. And FEMA is not a good friend of most people in Texas, because all they do is come in and tell you what to do and can't do. You can't get in your houses, and they hinder the local people, and they hinder volunteers from going in. So there's no magic about FEMA, and more people are starting to recognize that, because they are a great contributor to deficit financing, and quite frankly, they don't have a penny in the bank.
All right, Desi Doyen, he says, the people have surveyed, he's talking about the great storm of 1900 down there in Galveston, which is his district. He says, the local people survived without FEMA.
Well, I'm sure that the people in Galveston would be very unhappy when they hear this, because FEMA was there on the job after Hurricane Ike in 2008. That, I don't know if you recall, but Hurricane Ike actually scoured clean whole islands in the Galveston mm-hmm. Island region.
Yeah.
And FEMA was there right after with food, with water, with emergency services. These are the people who have been trained to deal with natural disasters. And the last thing you want is for local and state officials for example, on the eastern seaboard who haven't seen a hurricane in some cases decades, mm-hmm. to suddenly have to gear up to deal with emergency management when you have experts who actually know what to do.
I'm offended because he said this again on CNN tonight. He talked about the local people in the Galveston storm of 1900 that they survived without FEMA. Now, to me, how many people died? You have family from Galveston.
Both sets of my grandparents survived the great 1900 storm. That was before hurricanes had any names. And it was estimated to have been, in hindsight, a Category 4, possibly a Category 5, 6 to 8 to even maybe 12,000 people. They don't know how many people died, but that's because there was no seawall at Galveston at that time. Because of the great 1900 storm, they built a 15-foot seawall and raised the level of the island. It cost millions of dollars even at that time, and it took over 10 years to get the whole project completed.
So when he says the local people survived without FEMA...
he's saying that, they managed to rebuild their city without the federal government coming in to save them. And, that's...
Except for the 6 to 12,000 that died. Now, we don't know how many died in that actual flood.
Right, we don't know how many died afterwards. In the storm surge versus afterwards when they had to figure out how to dispose of the bodies that were left behind. They counted at least 6,000 bodies. More than that was probably swept away because many people were never accounted for.
And they kept washing up on the beaches.
Well, they basically, at the time, they had to... encourage men to volunteer at gunpoint to take the bodies out on barges out to sea where they dumped them. Then they then came back on the tide. So they then had to decide what to do with the bodies. They burned them in a funeral pyre for days and weeks afterwards.
And that would have been a job, had there been a FEMA at the time, that would have been a job that FEMA could have helped with after
Right, and it's getting the telegraph wires back up again. It was rebuilding the island after that. There was decades worth of work that had to be done, and because the federal government was able to help a little bit, but Ron Paul is wrong. This thing took decades to do, and Galveston never, ever returned to its former top spot as the biggest port in the United States, ever.
Speaking with Desi Doyen from GreenNewsReport.com. Bradblog.com. Brad in for Mike Malloy. She's going to stick around. Please stay with us.
Good night, dear. Good night, Irene. Good night.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike tonight. Please stop by the chat room at Bradblog.com. It's a lively chat going on over there as usual. And the lovelies for Earth, Jeannie Dean, and even Desi Doyen are in and out of there every now and again. So please stop on by and say hello over there. We'd love to hear from some of you folks up in the Northeast who are dealing still with the repercussions of Hurricane Irene, which you heard George Will in that Green News Report sniff, tropical storm Irene, I guess. Like...
I know,
it didn't
as
matter.
If somehow if you call it a tropical storm, if you call it a hurricane and it's only a Category 1, that it's hardly worth the media's paying attention to it.
This completely ignores something that I would think they understand in 7th grade science class. The Category 1, 2, 3, and 4, and Howard Kurtz, pay attention from CNN. These categories are about wind speed.
Have nothing to do with storm surge. And storm surge is where the most deaths occur in hurricanes. Storm surge is when the winds push that water out in the ocean, and that's a lot of water that they push up. In Katrina, it's estimated that the storm surge was somewhere between 25 and 37 feet, depending upon where you were.
And these storms, these more violent, more extreme storms, because they have more moisture in the air due to global warming.
And more energy because of the warm surface temperatures of the sea.
That's Desi Doyen, by the way. Did I mention that this segment?
No, we did not.
You just jumped in. It was great.
I did.
But But Peter Shumlin, the governor of Vermont, certainly understands. We're going to be talking with someone from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency in the next hour. But like I say, we do want to hear from you folks in Vermont. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Let us know how you're holding up out there in all those towns that are cut off from the world. Also Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, in the Adirondacks, Catskills. Sorry, Manhattan. Sorry, Howard Kurtz, that we couldn't deliver you a Katrinaville there, as the rude pundit put it.
Well,
but the rest of you,
we
want to. But let me actually, because we're going to run up on the break here, and I want to get Governor Peter Shumlin. He seems to get it. Here is what he said, the Vermont Democratic governor, dealing with what's going on up there in Vermont.
So the point is, we are getting more extreme weather patterns here in Vermont. We understand why, and we're going to work hard to not only dig out from this crisis, but to also ask some fundamental questions that I don't think are being focused enough in Washington, which is, how are we going to deal with a climate change future in terms of transportation infrastructure, where we build, how we plan, how we build our highways and transportation infrastructure? How can we do better to ensure that we're not continuing to sort of lurch from crisis to crisis?
Now, this puts us into the intersection of what both Bill McKibben is saying and what Governor Shumlin is saying and what all the climate scientists are saying, which is we can expect to see more intense and extreme, more frequent intense and extreme weather events, such as these tornadoes, such as flooding, such as hurricanes, and our infrastructure we already know is crumbling. So if we know that these things are coming up in the next 10, 20, 50 years, how are we going to plan ahead for this so that we don't end up getting huge budget hits trying to deal with these disasters?
We answer, we are not going to deal with them because we have a psychotic Republican Party on one side and we have a cowardly Democratic Party on the other side who, you know, ought to be out there banging the drum every day like that, like Peter Shumlin was up there just now, Democratic governor of Vermont, facing the costs of inaction. The Democrats ought to be up there every damn day raising holy hell, saying, here's our plan. Here's what we need to invest in. We cannot wait. And look, if the Republicans want to hold that up, want to keep that from happening, fine. There's an election coming up. So I've heard in a year or so. Let's have it out at that point.
And this is the jobs program. This is what President Obama has been trying to talk about when he makes all of these speeches about infrastructure and clean energy, specifically infrastructure. If we can get this infrastructure bank going that the administration is trying to push and Democrats are trying to push, then perhaps we might also get those construction jobs back. You know, there's a lot in America that needs to be rebuilt. The money is there. It's just a matter of getting Congress to agree.
Well, he does talk about it, doesn't he?
He does talk about
very
it.
Very eloquently.
Very, very. He says very nice, pretty words about it.
Pretty words. And for all you folks up there in Vermont, pretty words are coming your way. I'm sure that'll help. Jeremy up in Burlington, hang on the line. If you want to get in, 877-520-1150. Would love to hear your thoughts. We'll take right-wingers, too, who want to tell us that climate change isn't happening and we're just imagining all of this. You're listening to Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Please stay with us. A lot more ahead. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. I am your friendly citizen investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, blogger, all-around swell fellow in tonight for Mike in these hazy, lazy days of summer. Glad you could join us. And we are going to be going to Robert Steierwalt, I think at the bottom of the hour, from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency to get an update on how the state is doing out there in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, which Howard Kurtz of CNN thinks was just a bunch of hype. I wonder if somebody in his family had been one of the more than 40 people now killed in the third most deadly storm here in the U.S. since 1980. I wonder if he would think it was hype then. I wonder how many more people would have been killed, would have died, had the media, had the governors, the mayors, and I'm including Chris Christie and Bloomberg and Shumlin up in Vermont. Had they not, Cuomo in New York, had they not made the noise that they did and pulled off the first evacuations of downtown Manhattan in history, how many more people would have been dead and would have Howard Kurtz have been satisfied then that it wasn't all hype? Yes, the media are jackasses. Yes, they are idiots when they go out in their multicolored rain slickers and dance about. Nonetheless, a story like this deserves coverage. And frankly, it still deserves coverage, and it's no longer getting the coverage it deserves from much of the national media because, oh, Manhattan was spared. So to George Will, no problem. This was all overblown. To Howard Kurtz, who wrote at the Daily Beast, a hurricane of hype. It was raining in Manhattan on Sunday morning, and the dogged correspondents and their brightly colored windbreakers were getting wet. But the apocalypse that cable television had been trumpeting had failed to materialize. I wonder if the folks out there struggling in Vermont right now agree that it didn't materialize after all. If you're out there in the Northeast, 877-520-1150, I would love to hear from you. And we've got some callers that I'm going to go to momentarily, but I just need to... I forgot to say, bradblog.com. We've got our chat room open, so stop by there. You can tweet us at the Brad Blog, and that's it for the business. Now, in the wake of Hurricane Irene, this is from Think Progress today, which caused billions of dollars in damages up and down the U.S. eastern seaboard, House Republicans are callously claiming that any aid to victims of the disaster needs to be offset by budget cuts elsewhere. The savings that they favor, the savings favored by the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, would come from cuts to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and first responders. Brilliant. Hurricane hunters, that's what they want to cut. Military planes that fly into hurricanes in order to measure and track them. It's just unbelievable. The cuts were passed by the Republican Appropriations Committee in the House. They would take funding for these flights down from $29 million to $17 million, despite the fact that the flights helped save a substantial amount of money. Due to data from the hurricane monitoring flights, forecasts are 30% more accurate now. Since it costs $1 million per coastal mile for evacuation and preparation when a storm approaches, every mile that is not evacuated yields substantial savings for taxpayers. Estimates put the savings due to monitoring flights at $100 to $150 million per storm. And yet, of course, they need to cut, 10, $12 million from this program. That's your Republican Party. They want to do the same thing to Social Security, to Medicare, everything else. We're going to be talking about that in the next hour, I do promise you. 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Let's get an update from Jeremy up in Burlington, Vermont, who really got hit hard, didn't they, Jeremy? Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Oh, we definitely got hurt. Howard Kurtz is a windbag. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I can personally tell you I know of at least, I want to say, one or two deaths here in Vermont from it, where we lost 250-plus roads. We have 14 towns which are utterly cut out from civilization. You can't get to them any way you want.
So the old joke about you can't get there from here.
You literally can't get to 14 towns right now. It was so bad that yesterday they actually couldn't survey the damage because they couldn't get to most of these areas.
Which is just unbelievable to me. Now, were you safe? Were you spared, Jeremy, where you were up in Burlington?
Burlington was mostly spared. I live in a county named Chittenden County, and mm-hmm. there's spotted outages of power here. It was mostly wind and a few tree branches down. There wasn't a whole lot here, thankfully. But a little south of here and then major south of us here towards Rutland, Vermont, they were just hammered. I mean, they had like 6 feet of water that came down through the rivers.
And so what do you think when you hear, and I don't even know if you read it because you have, I'm sure, bigger problems to deal with right now, but, you know, a piece like Howard Kurtz or George Will going on the Sunday morning shows as the storm was hitting you guys. And actually, Jeremy, can you hang on? I don't know if you heard. Yeah. Did you hear what George Will had to say?
No, actually, I don't think I heard it.
Let me play this for you, because this was as the storm on Sunday morning was barreling through Vermont, upstate New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut. This jackass goes on the Sunday shows on this week on ABC and has this to say.
Florence Nightingale said, whatever else you can say about hospitals, they shouldn't make their patients sicker. And whatever else you want to say about journalism, it shouldn't subtract from the nation's understanding, and it certainly shouldn't contribute to the manufacture of synthetic hysteria that is so much a part of modern life. And I think we may have done so with regard to this tropical storm, as it now seems to be.
Manufactured synthetic hysteria. What do you think of that, Jeremy? You're sitting there in Burlington. What is that?
It's laughable because we lost... I heard of at least three of our precious historic covered bridges.
Yeah.
They were fewer and farther and spread between. We had a major flood here in 1927, which wiped out a majority of them. We have a few of them here and there, and at least three of them are gone now. Most of them will outdate all of our families if you put us together.
Yeah, and we actually have some video of that at bradblog.com in this article that I wrote on Sunday when I saw Kurtz's piece. I think it's called, I've called it, A Hurricane of Haplessness, Howard Kurtz. But we actually see that covered bridge disappeared, and your governor, Pete Shumlin, pointed out that those bridges, many of them, have been standing for a century. And, you know, they have weathered floods, you know, before over decades. But this one, this storm, what George Will of ABC called manufactured synthetic hysteria, this storm wiped them out.
Yeah, it was our worst flooding in well over 100 years.
Well, you know, it's unbelievable. Jeremy, I really do appreciate the call. Do you guys have electricity restored in Burlington and
luckily most of Burlington never lost power.
Good.
Most of Chittenden County stayed with power. Other counties suffered tremendously.
Well, stay dry out there, my friend. Good luck to you, and I really appreciate you checking in here tonight.
Sure.
All right. Take care. 877-520-1150. We're going to speak with the Vermont Emergency Management team, a representative there at the bottom of the hour, to find out how we out here can help those folks up in Vermont and the rest of the Northeast. But we would love to hear from you, your experiences, those who survived that, manufactured synthetic hysteria, according to George Will, and according to Howard Kurtz, a tsunami of hype. He said, this is from Kurtz's piece. The fact that New York, home to the nation's top news outlets, was directly in the storm's path clearly fed this story on steroids. Does anyone seriously believe the hurricane would have drawn the same level of coverage if it had been bearing down on, say, Fort Lauderdale? Great question, Howie. It turns out there are not 65 million people in Fort Lauderdale like there were up and down the eastern seaboard as this hurricane was accurately predicted to affect. 65 million people. I just want to keep calling him a jackass, but that wouldn't be polite. 877-520-1150. I'm going to take a quick break here. We'll come back to Andy in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Your chance to get in on to the Mike Malloy Show. Your public airwaves. Use them. Brad in for Malloy.
Cannon through the bathroom window. Get to buy super smooth.
You know, I'm just tempted to listen to it all day. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy tonight, broadcasting from the left coast, beautiful downtown Burbank. 877-520-1150 is our number. We would love to hear from folks. Again, of course, I realize a lot of your power is down, so you might not be able to call in, but we'd love to hear from you. 877-520-1150 if you were in the path of the storm, particularly as you're still dealing with it in many places up there in the Northeast. We will come back, I think, with Robert Steierwalt from the Vermont Emergency Management Agency, see how they're doing. But let me, and next hour, boy, this assault on Social Security. Oh, don't get me started yet, because I'll never stop. So I'll just hang on to it. Let's go to Andy in, there we go, Andy in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Andy, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Brad. You know, the idea of a storm doing a bunch of damage inland, let me tell you, Hurricane Dolly came ashore around Corpus Christi about 3 years ago, 800 miles inland. The remnants of the storm, the very curl of, you know, twist of the storm, I saw a, video of the whole thing. Ran into the southern Sacramento Mountains right above Ruidoso, New Mexico, and dumped 5 or 8 inches of rain on Ruidoso and basically washed the town away. It was an astonishing event, and it garnered no publicity outside of course, New Mexico itself. With this storm, Irene, my folks, I grew up in upstate New York. My folks live there. I called them and said, hey, you know, look out, get prepared, because this storm, if it takes that track, is going to just run into all the contours of the land, and it's basically going to rain itself out, and there's going to be a big problem. I'm not even a meteorologist, and I can figure this out. And fortunately,
how did your parents fare? Did you talk to them?
Perfectly fine. They were on the very west edge of the flooding, but a small town that they're familiar with, Margaretville, New York, south of Interstate 88, was absolutely, just demolished.
And that was that's in upstate New York?
Yes, yeah. Margaretville. And then another very small village, which I wasn't so familiar with Margaretville, but another small village,
Windham, New York, Keene in Greene County up there was just devastated, I understand.
They live in Otsego County, but around the Delhi area, South Moniana, the northern Margaretville lies at the northern edge of the Catskill State Park, and just was completely. I don't know. I haven't seen any pictures, but evidently, according to my ma, is just. Oh, Salisbury. Salisbury's the town in upstate New York, north of them, beyond the Mohawk Valley that got clobbered. I mean, it's incredible the scope of this storm.
It didn't happen at Howard Kurtz and George Will's house, so it didn't happen. Why don't these hurricanes have the courtesy to target Howard Kurtz and George Will's house? Well, Andy, I appreciate the call. I got to run here. Thanks, brother. Appreciate you calling in. Let me get to another one here before we have to go to a break. Gerald in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Gerald. What's on your mind, sir?
Very interesting show tonight. I was just interested, you keep commenting how earlier you were talking how cable shows, they tend to overhype everything.
Right.
Yet when George Will suggests that that's what happens regularly, he's getting crucified. So.
Well, he didn't suggest that that's what happens regularly. He suggested that that's what happened in this case as he sniffed Tropical Storm Irene. Yes, of course, they always go overboard on everything. But in a case like this, when you have a monster storm that turns out to be the third deadliest storm in the last 30 years, do you want the media to cover it or not cover it? Do you want them to let people know what is barreling their way? Whether they do it well or not, whether they cover it well or not, you don't go on while this storm is still rolling through state after state, drowning. Go look at some of these videos. You can see them on YouTube. You can see them. We got it at bradblog.com. Look at this and tell me that that is, what did he call it? Manufactured synthetic hysteria.
Yeah, I see your point.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gerald. I do appreciate the call, brother.
Say, on another topic, your 350.org fella.
Yeah.
We hear a lot about global warming, but it would seem they'd have better luck talking about ocean acidification.
Yeah, well,
and that sort of thing, and you don't hear a lot about that.
Well, you don't hear a lot about the topic at all because the corporatists who want you to not hear these stories, who want you to think everything's fine, there's nothing to worry about. They're the ones who own the airwaves. Mike Malloy is not on in every town. Well, he is on the satellite radio, but he's not on the free air across this nation the way the liars and scoundrels like Rush Limbaugh are. That's got to change. Brad, in for Malloy.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, 34 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. We're going to be joined very momentarily here with Robert Steyer-Walt, the public information officer at the Vermont Emergency Management Agency. By the way, tomorrow, unless there's another delay, please do look for the first of a two-part series of mine, a very, very exclusive hot story, finally to come, I believe, tomorrow, unless there's another delay, at Mother Jones, motherjones.com. You're going to enjoy that story. All right. Oh, great. We do have Robert Steyer-Walt now, I think. Do I have him? Hang on. They're working there. Oh, they're talking to him. Release him. There we go. Okay, now I've got him. Robert Steyer-Walt, public information officer at the Vermont Emergency Management Agency. Robert, thank you very much for joining us here. I know it's late out there. I know you're exhausted, and you probably have not slept for days at this point.
Well, it's good to be on your show, Brad. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, how are you guys holding up out there in Vermont? Last I heard, we had a caller who said there's still some 14 towns that are completely cut off from the rest of the state.
Yeah, that shrunk today. We're down to, as of this morning, we were down to 11, and I think we've done a good job of getting supplies into those towns today. There may be one or two that didn't get food, water, tarps, and blankets today.
How are you getting food, water, blankets to those towns that are cut off?
We're doing it by air with National Guard helicopters, and that'll really go into full swing tomorrow. We just did one airdrop delivery today, and the others have been National Guard trucks, four-wheel drive vehicles that have driven the supplies into the communities.
Now, you say airdrops. I mean, are they literally dropping this in, or are there places to land?
That's just a military term for what the actual. I mean, it's not like they're flying over and dropping the stuff. They land at a predestinated spot set up with the town.
Mm-hmm. And how are the folks holding up? How are the citizens holding up out there in Vermont, as far as you can tell?
Well, Vermonters are a resilient group. I mean, we're used to 3 feet of snow. We've had ice storms, and it's not unusual to have flooding in the spring when the rivers break up. You know, the rivers will break up. There'll be giant pieces of ice that backlog, and some of the main cities, like our capital in Montpelier, will flood, which is what happened in 92. What's unusual and aberrant about this particular event was, you know, we had 8 inches of rain hit the state in an hour. It's a tropical storm, so it's the summertime. And our rivers and tributaries just, you know, had no way of coping with that amount of water in that short a period of time.
Do you feel you're getting the coverage that you need from the media, from the I mean, I'm sure the local media is all over it, but is word getting out to your satisfaction about what folks in the Green Mountain State are going through across the national media right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what happened was after the storm passed through the major metro markets, such as New York City, and came up to Vermont, I mean, some of the most compelling video that's been, you know, featured on all the networks, CNN, ABC, CBS, has been, you know, when you have a covered bridge disappear that's been around for over a century, it's pretty compelling, and it's emotional, and it's heartfelt, and you know, we have a lot of infrastructure here that's been here forever. I don't know if you've ever traveled up to Vermont.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, part of what makes this state so amazing is you really don't know what's around the next corner. And almost every road in the state parallels a river or a stone wall or a and people have a lot of pride in their property and in their in living this way up here.
No doubt, a gorgeous estate, and I loved my time up there. How is the Vermont Emergency Management Agency, and I suspect you're not interested in all of this political nonsense that's going on, but they, you know, there's this debate about FEMA and everything else. Do you guys work directly with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and how is that going?
It's going great. In fact, I'll give you an example. Our state emergency operations center in Waterbury flooded, and we had to evacuate to Burlington. And we set up with FEMA, who was already established here with a joint field office in Burlington. And they took us in that night, and we've been sharing space ever since. And this is all part of, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the National Incident Management System, but that was formed several years ago, and we've been training ever since so that the federal government and the state governments can talk the same language. We structure the same way, which is we go into an incident command system, which was developed by the in California, actually, to fight the wildfires out there. So we all talk the same language. We've all bunkered in together very, very well. And there's been a lot of really good cross-pollination, not only of ideas, but of resources and back and forth.
So you find the FEMA a valuable service in a situation like this. You would not like to see them go away, as some are now talking about.
Oh, heck no. I think not only are they valuable, but we lean on them for a lot of different things. And they've been, I would say, invaluable since the storm hit.
How's your home, Robert? Did you survive your home, survive the storm okay?
I was fortunate. Driving home after working 48 straight hours, we had one tree that almost cracked a mailbox that had been chainsawed by one of the neighbors. But other than that, Chittenden County, which is the most populous area down by Lake Champlain, which is Burlington, Colchester, those communities were not hit very hard. And we've all looked at each other after the storm and said, I can't believe it's as bad as they're saying it is down south. But having worked in the operations center now for the last 3 days, it is bad down there. And a lot of communities have just been devastated.
Well, what do you feel, Robert Steierwalt, what do you feel that we out here in the rest of the nation need to know about what's going on up there in Vermont? And how is it that we can help? Can we help? Is there anything that we can do from out here?
Well, there's a Vermont Disaster Relief Fund that's set up. If anyone wants to contribute, it's www.vermont211.org. And I think the two things people should know is, one, if you hear someone say, you know, people are overreacting up in Vermont, I think we take umbrage to that because we're one of the, you know, just to survive a winter here, it takes a certain amount of toughness and
yes.
fortitude. And, you know, we're the people that stack four cords of wood and smile at each other when it's 30 below zero. This isn't something that we're used to. And I think we've been hearing a lot about, oh, now that the rivers have receded, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that water, after it goes back into the river, there's still all kinds of complications and problems if the water rises to a point where it fills the lowlands. And Vermont is basically a community that everyone builds their homes in the valleys and in the meadows. expecting that bucolic rustling river next to their homes is going to stay put, which has been the case for, you know, more than a century in some cases. And the fact that the rivers did overflow and violently tore things away and in some cases washed homes downstream, it is a big deal to us. And we're, you know, exercising our resilience, our patience, and our perseverance. And I guess I just would ask the rest of the country to acknowledge that, yeah, it is pretty bad in Vermont. Those people up there are tough, but we're doing everything we can to recover.
Yeah, well said. And they expect not just the rivers to be there, they also expect the roads and the bridges to be there. And many of them, I understand, are gone tonight. So Godspeed to you out there. Robert Steierwalt of the Vermont Emergency Management Agency. Help them out at the Vermont Disaster Fund, www.vermont211.org. I have that correct?
Yes, sir. That's right.
All right. Thank you, brother. Hang in there and try to get some rest, will you?
Thanks for giving us some airtime, Brad. We greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good luck to you, sir. All right. Wow. Well, there you have it. And he makes a good point, you know, about the folks in Vermont, the winters that they weather without a problem. These are tough. These are sturdy people. And they have been just absolutely, I think, taken off guard by this and by what has happened there. And, you know, I'll include myself in the media. We can follow a story when it's hot, when it's smoking, when the smoke is still coming out of the nuclear reactor, when the YouTube videos are still coming in with the bridges, just disintegrating away. But then we get distracted and then we move on to the next story. And, folks in FEMA are now looking at moving money from Joplin, from the recovery funding that's going on there in Joplin, Missouri, my old home state, and diverting it to pay for Irene emergency response. They have no choice. Because Congress has not come in. Congress has not passed emergency funding at this point. You got idiots like Eric Cantor, the majority leader in the House, saying, we're going to make this another hostage situation. We're not going to bring any money there at all unless we cut somewhere else. Of course, his home wasn't flooded. Virginia, I think, was spared. I admit to, as the storm was coming in, thinking to myself, man, and I'm sorry, by the way, in advance to anybody listening in Virginia, but man, I hope that if anybody is going to get hit with this hurricane, it's, you know, going to be in Eric Cantor's district. So he understands, so he can look at his own constituents and turn around and say, well, no, we're not going to give you all any money. Sorry, not until we cut something from somewhere else. They never need to cut Homeland Security, do they? They never need to cut money from the wars, from the endless wars, from the continuing scam that they call the War on Terror that continues unabated. No one ever talks about cutting those funds. But people here in these United States drowning in a flood, oh, they can go to hell. People, elderly people who need Social Security. Those welfare queens who want to have stuff like medicine for their ailments, they can go to hell. But the war on terror, that continues unabated. Nobody minds that at all. We'll just keep spending trillions and then we'll, you know, cut millions from programs and people who actually need it. 877-520-1150. I'll talk a little bit about Social Security. Unless you want to drive me elsewhere, unless you want to talk to me about something else. 877-520-1150. That is our phone number tonight. And we got a bunch of people online, and I will be, getting finally to that Social Security thing. Oh, that story tomorrow at Mother Jones. Did I mention that? Exclusive? If it comes out tomorrow, we keep delaying it. We want to get it right, people. Oh, but it's a hot one. You're listening to Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Please do stay with us.
Well, the first. the hardest days, don't you worry.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Well done, Tony. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike tonight. Just got word from our friend Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network. He is at Tar Sands Action out there in D.C., I believe. And we will be talking to him. He called in. And so we're going to talk to him after the top of the hour. So you'll want to stay tuned. For that, until then, we'd love to hear from you. 877-520-1150 is our phone number, 877-520-1150. We have a few open lines. We are, again, would love to hear from people up there in the Northeast. I tell you, I was quite moved by, I don't know why, by Robert Stylewalt, but I was up there with the Vermont Emergency Management Agency. I was talking to my engineer here, Tony, during the break, and we sort of agreed. He actually sounded like he was wet, like he was, you know, has been fighting what's going on out there, these floods for the last 3 days. And God bless him. You can help out the people of Vermont at www.vermont211.org, because if it were up to Eric Cantor, he would tell them to go to hell. If it was up to Ron Paul, he'd say, oh, you people can figure out how to do this on your own. You don't need the government. The banks, the corporations, they'll come in and help you. They'll save your 14 towns that are completely cut off from humanity. Unbelievable. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Steve in Austin, Texas, I do believe. Hey, Steve. Howdy.
Hi.
And welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi, Brad. Good to hear you. Always great to check in with you when you're sitting in for Mike. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. What's on your mind?
It's interesting. Whenever these storms move inland, whether it's...
How's that heat going on down there in Texas, by the way, Steve? How's that? All right, I won't rub it in, but I'll... anyway, go ahead. I'll get to that in a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. We're 70 days plus with 100-plus temperatures. We're expecting a break later in the week, but...
What global warming?
Yeah, what climate change? What are you talking about?
What record heat? What record drought? Rick Perry, your governor, he knows better than those scientists.
Right.
Those girly scientists, those queer scientists. All right, go ahead,
those
Steve.
Girly men, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, what'd you actually call for?
Well, it's interesting. Up until the time a storm hits the coast, down here in South Texas or up there in the Northeast, it's big news. After it moves inland, well, we got other things to cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I used to think it was just because primarily it was brown people, you know, in South Texas, you know, they'll make out.
Mm.
But now it's perfectly obvious that we're all brown people. If you're, you know, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, after he came back from Mecca and dropped his slave name, recognized that it wasn't a racial struggle. It was a class struggle.
That's
it. And then George Bush put the punctuation point on it at one of his fundraisers when he addressed the people as the haves and the have-mores.
Have-mores, yeah. And his supporters are the have-mores. You're exactly right, Steve.
It
really is. and it's getting worse. And the divide between the haves and the have-nots is just getting much worse. Steve, I really do appreciate it. And hang in there, brother. Winter is coming soon. You'll cool off eventually.
Oh, I hope so.
thanks for the call, Steve. I appreciate it. 877-520-1150. Do I have time? I do. Let's go to Nick in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Hey, Nick, how are you, sir? And did you survive the hurricane in good order?
We sure did, in spite of the Republican Party. Our house managed to not float away.
How do you think of Chris Christie? I sense you're not a fan of Governor Christie's. How did he do on this particular issue, on this hurricane?
Sometime sometimes the bulliness of his demeanor can come in a positive way, and getting people out of the beach areas when there's a hurricane coming on up. I agree with him on that particular point. You know.
Well, I sidetracked you, and I only got a minute here, Nick. So I don't want to lose your point. I just called for.
I just wanted to vent my frustration with the Democratic Party and Barack Obama. Every single time he has capitulated, every single time. When Bush was president, we've got extremist right-wingers in the Supreme Court.
Yep.
But when Barack Obama's president, oh, let's play nice, let's all hold hands, and I'll nominate a moderate to the bench. You know, when will the bubble burst? When will liberals finally pick up that this guy is not going to lead you to the promised land?
Well, I think they know that now. But did you think that he was when you voted for him in 2008, Nick?
I never vote Democrat. I vote Green Party.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons I didn't vote for him is because I saw that he would be exactly what he has become. He's a lousy negotiator. He's a corporatist. And this lesser evil thing is evil in and of itself. Nick, I got to get to a break. I appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you for holding on so long. We're going to come back. Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network is going to join us. Plus, more of your calls and Social Security. 877-520-1150. Brad, in for Mike. Get in now. Don't wait till the end. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. 6 minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative citizen journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com and I think beginning tomorrow from motherjones.com. You will watch for our exclusive story that I hope you will enjoy. Two-parter. Last time I was on was last month. I was complaining. This is the same story. This is how long we've been working on this particular story. Very exclusive, two-parter. This was the one that I complained about because I overwrote an entire part of the series. Well, we've reconstructed it, and hopefully we'll be running it tomorrow at Mother Jones. So watch out for that. We're going to be joined by our friend Bob Kincaid momentarily. What other business do I have to do here? 872. Did I say I was in for Mike Malloy? I did, didn't I? Yeah, okay. In for Mike. 877-520-1150 is our phone number if you would like to get in. We've been talking, of course, about Irene all night long to a certain extent. Because so much of the media is less interested now that, it didn't take down Manhattan, so we don't care. Well, we still do, and we're thinking about you folks up there in the Northeast. So we'd love to hear from you folks who were affected by that flood. 877-520-1150. Got some folks already hanging on the line, of course. We'll get to you as soon as we can. But we got a call just before the top of the hour here from our old friend Bob Kincaid of Head On Network, who actually follows. If you happen to listen on the Mike Malloy .com stream, you can listen to. I think you can listen to Bob's show tonight after we go off the air. Hey, Bob Kincaid, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Brad Friedman, it's so good to talk to you, pal.
Good to talk to you, my friend. Now, you're, thanks for checking in. You're, once again, causing trouble of your own. You're out there in D.C. tonight, are you?
I am. We arrived in D.C. this evening, and we will be going down to raise a ruckus at the tar sands protest in the morning, because the 31st of August,
It's all right. I know this is your first.
I have a button for that in my own studio. Sorry.
It's your first time on radio, Bob. I know you're probably nervous, so it's okay. Just relax. So you're in D.C. You're getting ready for a ruckus.
In the morning, it's going to actually be mountaintop removal day at the tar sands protest.
Oh man. Wow, going meta. So, and that's your thing. I mean, you've been covering mountaintop removal and what's going on in your home state out there in Virginia for years now, right?
Oh, come on, Brad. Come on. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to call you out. West Virginia.
Well, I'm sorry. West
Virginia. It happened in 1863, Brad.
Is there a difference? Really? West? I hadn't heard. Okay, West Virginia.
Well, not politically or anything.
I see. All right. So West Virginia, you whiner, complainer. So I know you've been covering a mountaintop removal out there. So they're devoting a day at the tar sands action. Are you going to get arrested, Bob Kincaid?
No, I am not.
You sure?
I'm actually the wheel man.
Okay.
when the universe tells you have a talent,
yeah,
you go with the talent the universe tells you you have. It was several months ago that I was here in D.C. and our mutual good friend Malloy was arrested.
Right.
And
Malloy was arrested out there? I didn't know he was.
Oh, heck yeah.
What did he get arrested? How long ago was that?
He was war protesting.
A lot of years. Wait, which war?
Oh, stop it! It was April, okay, or maybe March.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and Malloy was arrested, and I just wanted to make sure because when they arrest you here in D.C., they take you to the furthest corner of D.C. and take your $100 and turn you loose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place where, like, well, you know, good luck to you getting a ride home or whatever. So Mike's friend, Pterodactyl, and I found the Anacostia U.S. Park Service jail processing facility, and we picked up Mike. And since then, I've become rather a pro at picking up recently arrested protesters. So what's going to go on tomorrow is a couple of my friends are going to get arrested, and I'm going to be the wheel man because you don't want to be turned loose in Anacostia all by yourself.
I see. All right. So you're going to be.
But what will be going down is with the miracle of really cheesy internet. If everybody stands on one leg, sticks their tongue out, and puts their left hand in the air,
right,
I'll be able to send some live video of tomorrow's protest.
Nice.
To the Ustream channel for the horn.
Very good. Well, you know, standing on one leg, Bob, I was down there in Crawford 5 years ago. Where was it now? Six years ago.
A little bit about that, right?
Yeah. Well, we didn't even have. Are you kidding? It was all dial up, and we had to actually, you know, plug it into a cow or something like that out there in the middle of the cow field, 120 degrees. So 100 is, you know. So don't complain. You guys got it made out there. We had Bob Kincaid. We had Bill McKibben on earlier today. I don't know if you were able to hear it talking about this action at the White House, which folks can get more information at tarsandsaction.org. Bob, what do you think? Is Barack Obama going to approve or reject the permission for this monster pipeline that is coming our way?
Brad, I'm gonna withhold judgment on that.
Yeah.
Because in a way, you know, I think we all know what we expect Barack Obama to do. It has to do, well, you know, there's only one national park in the United States that's named Cave, and it's called Mammoth Cave.
Right.
And you know, if Barack Obama was to Mammoth Cave, we wouldn't be surprised.
I didn't realize that national park is named after our current president. I hadn't realized that. Yeah, no, I think he's going to cave soon, too.
But the fact of the matter is, there is something much more important going on here.
What is
that? I'd like to make two points.
Yeah.
The first point is that this is the first protest. And as someone who followed the Velvet Revolution in Eastern Europe, I think you're going to understand why this is important.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first protest that hasn't happened on a Sunday and went away Monday.
Mm. Good point. Yep.
This has been going on for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And maybe it'll fold up in a couple more days. Or you know what? Maybe it'll just keep going.
Well, That would be great because, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, people do these protests and they're like, oh, how cute, they're protesting. And then the people go home. You know, what made the difference in Wisconsin was they not only showed up to protest, but they refused to go home. Right. And that makes all the difference.
And I think there's an element of that involved with this. Because you've got a whole bunch of people who understand that we're not here for some sort of vanity purpose. You know, we're not here because some group gave us some money to stand here for a day and we're going to go home and, didn't we do a lovely job? No, this is about the living, breathing, beating heart, Brad, of the whole darn planet.
Yep. Yep.
And so this moment being created for the mountaintop removal community to come into this is really, really special because, you know, granted, I'm a little partial here, Brad, but I'm proud of saying that a long time ago, the people who were protesting mountaintop removal weren't protesting it because it's some sort of environmental offense. They were protesting it because it's destroying their lives. And what we're talking about with the tar sands, you know, this is a teachable moment, Brad, where people from Appalachia reach out to people from Canada and all the people in the middle and say, you know what? If it's not okay to do it to us, it's not okay to do it to anybody else. And it expands, Brad, beyond the confines of the North American continent to people who have been run over with forklifts in Mongolia, to 20,000 people who stand to be removed from lands that they've lived on since time immemorial in Bangladesh, okay? We are all in this fight, and it is a planetary struggle. And we begin it here, Brad. We begin it here.
Yeah, we do indeed, and thank you for being on the front lines, Bob Kincaid, as long as you have. The fight against mountaintop removal out there in West Virginia, of course, every night or five nights a week or so on the headonradionetwork.com, The Horn.
Yeah, I'll be back Friday.
And, if you stay out of jail. And, of course, right now out there in D.C., checking in with us tonight at the Tar Sands Action protest, which will go through this weekend. We talked to Bill McKibben, I think he said through Saturday, maybe through Labor Day. Get more information at tarsandsaction.org.
Well, Brad,
yes, sir.
Brad, just as a reminder, there's no guarantee, but tomorrow morning I'm going to try to send live streaming audio, live streaming video.
Good.
From the Tar Sands Action, from people who are actually going to be arrested.
And what time can
about why they're going to be arrested, and it's going to be at the at the Horn's Ustream channel. Just look for The Horn or Head On Radio Network on Ustream.tv, and you'll find it. And it should start about 9:30, 10 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow morning.
Very good. Very good. All right, sir. Appreciate that. Keep raising hell. And who's doing your show tonight after this? Is it you or John Fox?
It's nobody. I'm a rerun. I'm sorry.
Another rerun. Happens. Well, it's the lazy, hazy days of summer, and you've got more important things to do, like save the world in D.C. Hey, Bob, thanks.
Well, you know, one of these days I'll write you a check, and you'll just do 6 hours of radio. How would that be?
I'm happy to be here at all. Anyone who'll have me, you know me, I'll show up and talk. Hey, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it, brother. Appreciate all you do, and we will talk to you soon. Good luck tomorrow.
We love you, brother. Thank you so much.
You bet. All right, that's Bob.
Take care.
All right, you too. Bob Kincaid from HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, our old friend. All right, when we come back, your calls, 877-520-1150, a word or three about Social Security and the assault, the attack on a program that is the most beloved and the most successful virtually in the history of this nation. So, of course, we got to destroy it. Brad, in for Mike.
Well, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like a well, I've been down so very damn long.
Welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Got a lot of folks waiting on hold, so let me get right to Phil in Torrington, Connecticut. How'd you weather the storm, Phil? And welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Just basically, I mean, the storm, it didn't affect me as much, you know, at my home. You know, we didn't lose electricity, but me talking to coworkers and talking to people at the gym, now these people have been out of power since Saturday night, you know, and what's it now, Tuesday? I mean, it's looking like it's not going to end anytime soon. And where I live, there's a lot of wetlands.
Yeah.
And where the DMV is in our town, it was completely flooded out. And actually, I'm trying to get a new vehicle registered, and you can't do anything because everything's shut down. You got to go across the state to go to another DMV. So, I mean, it's definitely not as bad as the gentleman from Vermont said it was.
I mean,
it sounds terrible, especially like cities near rivers and everything. But
All I can say is it's a good thing that Connecticut doesn't have a one of these photo ID, polling place photo ID restrictions where you're supposed to go to the DMV if you don't have a driver's license, because the DMV is shut down, is washed away in Torrington, Connecticut.
Yeah.
So you'd be screwed. You wouldn't be able to vote.
No. Well, maybe it is a plan for the Republicans to do that. And the things you're talking about, Eric Cantor, I mean, this guy is brilliant beyond us, obviously, because he talks about things like, I think he just talks because he likes the sound of his voice personally. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But the things that he says, I mean, and even just going into deeper of it,
mm-hmm.
these people, Michelle Bachmann, Eric Cantor, they trust in God. They do what God tells them to do, you know, and they want to take away funding for FEMA. You know, imagine if they were president, you know. They would, you know, decide whether FEMA is going to get it. It shouldn't even be a question. It shouldn't be anything.
No, and it didn't used to be. It never was. It certainly wasn't.
It
certainly never was when Bush was president, when Cantor was, you know, voting for FEMA aid without a problem. This is all
absolutely.
About attacking the presidency. They're willing to take down the country to do it, to get the White House back. That's what all of this is about. It has nothing to do with saving money.
Absolutely disgusting.
Phil, it is. I got to get to a break here. I appreciate your call, my friend. Good to hear from you out there. Stay safe up in Torrington, Connecticut. You know, this is the difference. You know, Cantor didn't give a damn about I was critical earlier of Ron Paul for what he said about doing away with FEMA. But he's been consistent. He's been saying that for years. He means it. Eric Cantor doesn't mean it. Eric Cantor is pulling this political crap. Now, I hope Napolitano stands up to him. She says she hopes to. She says that Congress knows that this is historically the way disaster relief funding has been handled. Appropriators have been kept informed on a regular basis about the status this year, and money is just given when it's needed. More ahead. Brad in for Mike.
Who'd draws the crowd and plays so loud, baby, it's the guitar man. Who's gonna stay? Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit.
34 minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. As we bring it around the bend here, start to bring her home. Wanted to make sure I get this in because I have been getting unbelievable traffic coming in today at Bradblog.com from Reddit, where this story went straight to the top of the politics page over there. And, well, I'll give you some thoughts on it for a moment. But this was a story from our legal analyst and great guest blogger, Ernest Canning, about Bernie Sanders, who will be introducing legislation to ensure Social Security remains solvent for at least 75 years. It's already going to be solvent for 25 years, but now for at least 75 years. How? By simply raising the caps so that someone earning $106,000 a year contributes the same amount as a billionaire to Social Security. Bernie Sanders wants to change that, and this is modeled after a promise President Obama, President Obama made during his 2008 campaign to attach the Social Security payroll tax to all incomes over $250,000 for the next 75 years. Social Security would pay out all its benefits, and it would not cost a nickel, as Sanders put it, to the deficit, as it does now. It does not cost a nickel to the federal deficit. Do not be conned by the right wingers. Here was Bernie Sanders last week in Las Vegas with the United Steelworkers Convention in Vegas. A minute or two from his remarks on Social Security.
There has been too much discussion in this country, not just from Republicans, but from Democrats alike, that we should be making cuts in Social Security. That is wrong. Let me say a word about Social Security. You know, sometimes when you have a program that is working so well and has worked so well for so long, we kind of take it for granted. So let me say a word about Social Security. When Social Security was developed in the 30s, its goal was to cut down on senior poverty. And when it was developed, 50% of seniors lived in poverty. Today, poverty among seniors is too high, but that number is 10%. Social Security has done exactly what it was designed to do. Think about this. For 75 years, in good times and in bad times, Social Security has paid out every nickel owed to every eligible American. For 75 years, every American has got what he or she is entitled to. Don't let anybody kid you. Social Security today, has a $2.6 trillion surplus. Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 25 years. Social Security has not contributed one penny to the deficit, and I will be damned if they're going to cut Social Security.
God bless Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, there speaking to the United Steelworkers Convention in Las Vegas last week before the Hurricane Irene devastated his state. Look, You heard what he said. He was lowballing it, saying that 50% of the elderly population lived in poverty back in 1935. In fact, most statistics put that much higher, around 78%. 78% of men 64 and older, 78% of them in 1939 were living in poverty. For women, it was 77.5%. Now, it is 9.4%. Again, as he says, too high. But for those people who say, oh, the war, and they said, and when I say those people, I mean those right-wingers, those scammers, those liars who are out there telling you the war on poverty did not work, well, think again. Because Social Security was at the very heart of that war, and going from 78, can you imagine 78% of elderly in poverty, now down to 9.4. Well, that story, that video that we covered at bradblog.com that Ernie Canning covered, went to the top of the reddit.com. It's an aggregator site, and a lot of people voted it up, and there was a big debate back in the comments from some of these people who I cannot believe. Well, yes, I can. I was going to say, I cannot believe how ill-informed, how misinformed these people are. Here's one guy who calls himself Cheney Healthcare. He says, people need to understand that Social Security is 12% coming out of your wages. The 6% from you and 6% from your employer is all of your money. The real question is, those who want to put away for their retirements or who can retire on the back of their own work and savings, why should they have to contribute anything to Social Security? Another commenter says, let people opt out of government programs. Ron Paul, 2012. Another one says, I just want to be able to opt out. Letting people control their money is not that radical of an idea. Well, really? Really? You know, in 1935, all of those elderly, those 78% of our population who were living in poverty, they opted out of Social Security because Social Security didn't exist at the time. And for these idiots, I don't know if they're con men or if they're just stupid. Take your pick. But for these guys to say, oh, we would like to opt out. Where the hell will you be when you opt out of Social Security, when you put all your money into the stock market, when it falls through the toilet again, or when you live beyond what you thought you would live and you run out of money? Where are you going to go? You're just going to say, oh, I don't have any money, so I'm just going to go out in the street and die. No, you're going to turn to government services. You're going to look for help. We, the people, are going to be there for you. I mean, you know, I guess the generation has died off now who actually remember the Great Depression, who remember what it was like before Social Security. When, you know, this huge majority of elderly people just, they ran out of money and they had nowhere to go, and to hell with them. I mean, are you people out there so stupid or so misinformed that you don't understand that these programs like Social Security that you're being lied about to, why Barack Obama was even talking about the possibility of cutting Social Security, which is solvent for 25 years as is if we do not touch it. It's solvent for 25 years. Aside from the pirates and plunderers who have stolen from the trust fund and to put it into foreign wars and to put it into, homeland, quote unquote, homeland security. Keep your hands off the Social Security. Remember when we used to make fun of Al Gore? Oh, put it in a lockbox. Put that goddamn money into a lockbox and stop raiding it for everything else. This is Republicans and Democrats alike. But to take it out on Social Security recipients, I mean, have you looked at any of these town halls? There was one today, Chuck Grassley. I think it was today. Got it here somewhere. I don't know where it is. He said something along the lines of, well, I don't know anybody in Congress who wants to privatize Social Security. Except for you, Senator Grassley, who voted to do exactly that back in 2005. Here we go. Along with, 118 other Republicans currently in the House and Senate who are on record supporting Social Security privatization. Which means that, you know, they want to let you put it into the stock market. How's that going for you lately? Social Security never hurt anyone, but it did help millions of Americans. It continues to do so today. It cuts into nobody's deficit. In fact, it funds the rest of the government because it's doing so well. It works. It always has worked, and anybody who tells you differently is either stupid or, more likely, on Fox News, and they're lying to you. Look it up. Go to PolitiFact, Texas PolitiFact, looked it up, fact-checked all of this stuff about, you know, what the rate of poverty was back in 1935 compared to what it is now since we've had Social Security, since we've had Medicare. I mean, it's just, you know, to me, it's incredible. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at these people talking about cutting these programs to people, to Americans, to the middle class, to the poor. Cut their programs because these idiots like Eric Cantor spent the last 10 years plundering this nation for their corporate friends, for their foreign wars that continue today that they're not talking about cutting. But the poor person, the elderly guy in poverty, man, woman in poverty, they've got to pay the price. The people drowning out in Vermont, cut off from the rest of the of their state, those towns where you know they can't even reach them. They've got to airdrop in food. Those people can all go to hell. Got to cut FEMA money. Got to move it from those people out in Joplin who lost their homes. Got to move it around. Got to shove. Got to cut somewhere. What kind of country are we? What kind of country do you want this to be? And how long are we going to stand for this? This election can't come soon enough next year. Whether we'll be able to count on the results, whether people will be able to vote, that's another matter. But let's get this done. Brad in from Molloy.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me.
My thanks tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Thank you, sir. As always, smartly done. And thanks for the short notice here. Really appreciate it. Of course, to my lovely producer, screener, all-around badass partner, Desi Doyen of the Green News Report. Also to Dale and 4Earth in the bradblog.com chat room. Of course, to Mike and Kathy Molloy for allowing me to sit behind their microphone. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, we'll have it up later tonight at bradblog.com. My thanks also to my guests, Bill McKibben of 350.org, Robert Steyerwalt of the Vermont Emergency Management Agency, and Bob Kincaid, who checked in to with us from the Horn. Okay, I've got two calls and a special guest in the studio, so let me take these calls really, really quick, and then we'll get to our very special guest here momentarily. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show. What's on your mind, brother?
Talking about Social Security, Rick Perry, a very dangerous radical rat,
said that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
The only Ponzi scheme that's going on is Republicans ripping off the middle class and transferring it to the rich.
Smartly said, sir. You know, they were saying that same thing in the comment section over at Reddit. They were saying, oh, it's a Ponzi scheme. Why is it a Ponzi scheme? Oh, well, because investors get paid by other investors' money. It was like, oh, you mean like insurance? You mean like those Ponzi schemers at State Farm? God, these people will believe anything. Mark, I appreciate the call. Thank you, brother. And let me get finally here to Ron in Prescott, Arizona. And I now know how to pronounce it's not Prescott. It's Prescott, Arizona, because I went camping there earlier this summer, Ron, for a couple of nights, and it was gorgeous. So thank you for that, and welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Ron.
Yeah, Brad, preach on. That sermon on Social Security was great. Hey, did you hear about John Stewart doing an expose on the establishment media for ignoring Ron Paul after the Iowa caucus?
Oh, yeah.
The talking head said there's a new top tier, Romney, Perry, and Bachman. Yet, if you look up all the polls so far, there's been 14. Ron Paul's won 6, tied 1, and come in second in 2 others. And total votes percentage, Ron Paul has 18%, Romney 14.6, Kane 8%, and Bachman 8%.
Well, of course.
Yeah, Ron Paul is ignored, and he's not in the top 10.
Well, you know, and he's ignored, Ron, because the media, not the voters, the media have decided he's quote-unquote unelectable. So that's their job there. I'm just looking forward to when they give us the 2 candidates that we're allowed to vote for at the end. Hey, Ron, I appreciate the call. Thank you, brother. All right, good to hear from you. Joining me live in the studio tonight, she's been screening your phone calls. You know her from the bradblog.com chat room. If you're up there in Wisconsin, you are mighty grateful to her for the help and organization she did up there during those recall elections. Our very own Jeannie Dean joins us here live in the LA studio. Hey, Jeannie.
Hi, Brad.
Oh, what a season. You hear that smoky voice?
That's what you get from 2 packs a day. Oh, while is you're that tracking what does it? Wisconsin stats.
I wouldn't know. listen, I just want to thank you not only for helping us out tonight and all the time in the chat room, but for your great work on Wisconsin, helping to herd the Facebook cats, I think, up there, the great folks at the Election Integrity page on Facebook. Where is that, and how can people participate?
Thank you so much, Brad. Well, there's several groups. You can find us by Googling Election Integrity on Facebook, but 2 groups specifically, which is the Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And Election Defense Alliance Wisconsin. Uh-huh. Both you can find on Facebook. And we want to thank you, Brad. Well, for keeping us so well informed and for doing such an amazing job on following up on all of the incredible information Wisconsin citizens and voters have brought to light through the recount, through the recalls, and now going into
another recall.
Looks like it might happen.
We'll see if it happens. Right. Very interesting question that we don't have time to get into tonight, unfortunately. But there's a question about whether the recall of Scott Walker, if it happens, if that would remove Scott Walker and the lieutenant governor. What's her name? Rebecca Clefish.
Right.
Because they run as a package like president and vice president.
That's right.
And so very interesting puzzle. Your friends at the Wisconsin Government Accountability Board.
Yes, they're my buddies.
Are looking at this issue right now, and we will find that out. And, you know, tonight, Jeannie Dean, you're a great, for years, great election integrity advocate from Florida to Wisconsin to out here in California. I didn't even get to talk about the Mississippi election clerk.
That's incredible information. Well, people should go to Brad Blog.
He said he got permission to remove the paper trail printers from his Diebold touchscreen machines because he said there is no way for them to be tampered with.
He said that, and then and he would like to remove them to make it easier for those poor dear poll clerks.
Yes.
They have such trouble.
Yeah, that's what he said, right. Yeah. They're always causing problems, these printers. And they are. And he's right about that. They are a pain in the ass.
But the solution.
And they don't make the machine any more verifiable, to be frank.
Exactly.
Whether there's a paper trail or not. But his notion that.
Removing them.
Yes. He said the voting machines record every vote and there is no way for them to be tampered with.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, despite the copious and Herculean efforts from everybody to bring
the Harry Hursty hack, and some breaking news that I can't give you details on, but soon we will have yet another hack of a Diebold voting machine from a national laboratory, one that should scare the holy crap out of you.
Is that what you've got?
That's not tomorrow's story,
but
that's coming soon.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in tonight, guys. I don't know if we'll be back here tomorrow night or not, but if we are, I hope you'll join us. If not, join Mike Malloy. Good talking to you guys. Keep it lit, America.